The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done for professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Tuesday, 27th day of March, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 7, S&P up 1, the comp up 7. I think gold's up like a quarter, I don't know, 50 cents. Not much. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
How are you?
I am well so far. How about yourself?
Very good. You sound kind of quiet.
Trying to adjust some stuff here.
All right, you go
see
right
if I
ahead.
Can fix that problem from this morning. Is that any better?
Well, I mean, we can hear you. You're just not as loud as you normally are.
Okay.
All right, guys. Last week, I mentioned to you about the Hunger Games, that the movie was coming out this weekend, that Suzanne Collins had written the trilogy, and that some were saying that it was a stone-cold ripoff of a Japanese movie from, I don't know, some 12, 13 years ago. This thing was so big, Forbes magazine reviewed it this weekend. Typically, Forbes, they don't review movies. But they saw this one coming after the Twilight Saga. And, you know, the teens have a lot of buying power these days. And that's kind of who this is geared at. Although, I think, supposedly, some adults like it as well. But they saw this coming, that it's not just going to be a book or a movie or three books, a movie which will become three movies, another franchise along the lines of the werewolf stuff or the Harry Potter stuff. You get my drift. Anyway, Forbes was onto it. They reviewed it this weekend, blah, blah. And the name of the Japanese movie, Battle Royale. Now, they say that the similarities are just stunning. In fact, she is absolutely defiant that she never, ever saw the movie Battle Royale when she wrote The Hunger Games. But, in case you haven't heard, The Hunger Games are the big thing going on right now, and you probably heard it first right here on CFRN. Now, real quick, we're going to talk about Apple and the risk of trading 29,000 times per second. You heard on this show last Friday that BATS kind of messed up their own initial public offering by mangling trades in a bunch of stocks whose symbols were at the top of the alphabet. Now, that, of course, includes Apple, AAPL, and BATS, its own stock. Apple shares briefly fell by $55 a share, and BATS, the exchange, it had been trading for more than $15. It fell to less than 4 cents. Now, NASDAQ quickly erased all the trades, and BATS was allowed to just cancel its IPO. In other words, they get a do-over. I don't know if that's ever happened, but it has now. Now, the official explanation for what happened, or at least the one that the BATS folks and the Security Exchange Commission, SEC, worked out, this became the official story, is that software in a server covering stock symbols from A to BFZZZ went a little haywire, spitting out what are known as false prints. Now, that actually made more sense than the original explanation that we got. We were told initially that it was a fat finger trade caused by someone hitting the wrong keys. Now, it's kind of hard to imagine someone hitting $542.80. That's the price that was entered when they actually meant to hit $598.23. I mean, 542.80 versus 598.23. I don't know. I guess it could happen. Now, investors are a little suspicious. For one thing, false prints happen a lot more frequently than what the official BATS record would suggest. Apple investors are still complaining about a mini flash crash this morning when Apple suddenly dropped from just under 600 to 570. The print was erased, but a $582 trade that looked equally bogus was for some reason allowed to stand. Now, why, investors want to know, and so do I, do false prints and fat finger trades always happen on the downside? Have you ever heard of a fat finger trade going in favor of the trader or the investor? It always benefits the hedge funds who are running the computer-driven algorithms through the high-frequency platforms like BATS, which is the largest of the independent exchanges. Now, there's a good chance that prior to last Friday, many of you had never even heard of BATS. However, in 2011, BATS accounted for more than 1 in 10 U.S. stock trades. Okay, an exchange you never heard of, processing 10% of all U.S. stock trades. But that's not the number that's going to blow you away. 10%? Not a big deal. You ready for this? They process. You're not ready for this. I'm going to tell you anyway because we have to move on. They process an average of 29,000 trades per. Michael, fill in the next blank if you would like to take a stab at it. BATS processes an average of 29,000 trades per.
I'm going to say less than a second. Microsecond.
Ding, 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 ding. What do I have? See, do we got applause? We got applause. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Now, we trade futures. That's a whole different issue. But, not really. It's going to tie into a little bit about what we talk about today. But you're a trader. You're trading stocks. You know, you got to maintain your $25,000 balance so that you can be, quote unquote, a day trader. And you really enjoy trading 50 to 100 lots. And you sit there, man, and you watch that chart. And, boy, things got to line up just right. And then you finally pull the trigger on your 50 lots. And I'm not trying to talk down anybody because they trade 50 shares or 100 shares. Nothing further from the point. All I'm saying is that we, the little guys, we're up against the machine that's making 29,000 trades per second. Okay, that's an awful lot of computer power. And if you think that these 29,000 trades being made per second have anything to do with some guy clicking a mouse or pulling a lever or tweaking a dial somewhere, it doesn't. Okay. These are algorithms. These are computer-driven trades. These are machines ping-ponging the ball back and forth, back and forth. So far this year, Apple has made 27 new all-time highs, I think is the correct number. Okay. So occasionally, I mean, you start pinging that ball so fast, eventually somebody misses the ball. And they go, oops, they got to run, grab it, get it back up on the table, and start pinging it again. This market, look at the manner in which it climbs. Okay, are we substantially higher than we were this time yesterday? Yeah, we were. And we know about that flat spot that we sat in yesterday right here. And we had said, as we closed out the show, one idea. There was two ideas on the table. One was to buy 1406 on a stop, okay? And that's the other option was to wait out a pullback that never came back down to the weekly zone at 1399, 1400. That opportunity never presented. This opportunity where we pulled into the blue MA1 and rallied, taking out this little ledge right here, that worked beautifully. And then overnight, as prices flattened out here, got on the backside of the MA1, and price pulled up to it, closed below it, and then that's been the action of the day from 1417 down to 1410. Is that the low right there? Yeah, 1410. So 7-point move since the London Open. But since the U.S. Open, Michael, the range has been how much?
4 points. 4 points exactly.
4 points. See, 4 points, in my opinion, that's not real buying and selling pressure. Okay? It's something different. Okay? Is it man versus machine? Well, we use machines. We as men use these machines to trade these markets. But is this all going to just go away at some point? Are we going to get back to more normal market activity? Are things going to return to the way they were? I don't know. All I know is we keep walking into days where we are staring at this. This is the Tao. The Tao doesn't do this. The Tao doesn't do this from 9 o'clock Chicago time until 10:35, actually 10:49. It doesn't. But yet, it did. What's driving it? I don't know. I'm just pointing it out to you. I don't make this stuff up. I just report the news.
Oftentimes, after a huge trend up day or trend down day, there'll be a consolidation day following it. But usually, even in the consolidation day, you get more range than we've had on the ES.
He whispered. All right, you ready to do it?
Yeah. Yeah, is my volume that low?
Oh, there. Now it sounds pretty good.
Okay,
it's not that low. We can hear you. I was just messing around.
Okay.
Go ahead, take it away. I know there's not a lot to recap, but do your best. Okay.
We did take a bunch of trades on the Russell this morning.
Actually, you did, didn't you?
We did. The Russell moved around a little bit. All right. Let's just see. You guys are looking at my charts. Okay. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, March 27th, 2012. We're going to go over the trades that we took in the live trading room this morning. But before we do that, I want to point out to everyone who's in here on a free trial, or everyone who has not taken the free trial, and wants to use our indicators for a whole week, you get our indicators, you get all the data feeds, you get everything that you see right here in front of you for 5 business days. All right, that's our free trial. If you want to take that, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. That's APPLY, okay? cfrn.net/apply. And you'll be able to access all this stuff and sit in our live trading room with us and watch us go over everything that's here and everything that's in the recaps that are on the website. All right. Now, there's not really much to talk about this morning. Dwayne went over how we were stuck in this 4-point range. I'll just point out here, this was the high. I drew this channel around the downtrend that was happening this morning. The high was right here at 14.14, and the low was put in right here at 14.10. All right, from there it bounced up, broke our channel a little bit right here. Doesn't seem to be all that meaningful of a move at this point. For the majority of the morning, the YM over here was consolidating right inside the weekly trading zone. All right, it dropped down here from pre-market right here. We had a bearish cross, MA1 down below the BBC, pulled back up here to the BBC for a possible short trade right there, and it dropped all the way down to the zone. Once it hit the zone, it just went sideways all morning. All right. At the end of the morning session, it moved up off of the zone. Didn't give us any opportunity in here just yet. Actually, it would have been right here. Sorry, my mistake. It would have been right there. Okay, that's where you would have been looking to go long if you were watching the YM at the time. I clearly was not, because I did not go long there. I have a gold chart here. Let me move that over. The ES, we didn't take any trades on. The NQ, I'll show you that. We took... we took on the NQ. We didn't take any trades, but we went over some possible setups this morning. The double divergence type setups right here. All right. Right there where it tested the BBC, closed above the MA1. That's where you would have been looking to get long. Right here, it's almost put in some double divergence here, but it's not quite there yet. In this case, you would be looking for it to test the BBC here, close back up above the MA1, and continue on the upward side. Back here a little bit, we didn't have bullish divergence. Right here we had some bullish divergence, but it didn't close above the MA1. That's pretty much it. The NQ didn't really have much to go with today either. All right, so let me slide that off. We did take a couple of trades on the 6E this morning. Both of them, unfortunately, lost 8 ticks. So we lost 8 ticks on this trade and followed that up with another 8 tick loss on this trade. Had we been trading, there was a bounce off the BBC right here that would have gotten us back one of those 8 tick losses. And had we been trading earlier in the morning, there was another opportunity in there. But we did not. We did not trade at this point in the morning. It was a little before we were actively trading. All right. So I'm going to move the 6E off. Now I'm going to get to the Russell, okay? Because we did take quite a few trades in the Russell this morning. Let's start with this. I think I marked this chart up. And most of the trades that I took were on this chart. So I'll just scroll back to the open here. Okay. The results of the morning, plus 9 ticks on the Russell. Okay. And the minus 16 ticks on the EC. All right. The first trade that we took right here, the price started to decline. We had a close down below the green line right here, below the MA1. After the combo turned down here and here. At the same time, we had... Let's just scroll back here. At the same time, we had a similar trade going on over here, right? That was at 9:35. It was dropping down through the BBC right here. Okay, so we went short there. The price went about 8 ticks in our favor. We moved our stop up to break even. It came back and stopped us out at break even right here. All right. The next trade that we took on the other side, right here, it turned up and we took a long trade right here. Price again moved about 6 or 8 ticks in our favor. We moved our stop to plus 1 tick. It came back and got us out at plus 1 tick. This was a news event right here. This and the following moves right here all happened in a news event. All right. Let me scroll through a little farther here. I did go short in here, but I took it off at break even because the price was acting pretty erratically, and it was still right after a news event, so I just took the trade off at break even. Right here, there was an opportunity to get long. Here, an opportunity to get short. This one did go the 10 ticks, so did this. Then there was another opportunity here to go long. That went the 10 ticks. Another opportunity here for a short that went 10. We got into this one right here, and this one did end up going 10. We took a little bit of profit on it. I think we took 1 tick profit on it. This next one, you know, we got into it here, and it went up to here. Gave us about 5 or 6 ticks profit, and then it pulled back down and got us out of break-even. The next one over here, we went short right in here, and we took, I think, 7 ticks profit. That ticked down here on our 10 tick profit target, but it didn't fill us. And I moved my stop up, and we got out with 7 ticks profit right there. Over here, we shorted here and took a break even. We went long here and took a break even on that, too. I thought we had actually gotten a tick on that, but we took a break even on that. And that was it. That was our morning. There were more opportunities in here, but they were during the break period. Right? There was one more here on the downside, one more here on the long side, and actually another one just happened over here a few minutes ago on the short side. I'll just draw these in for you so you can see them. Okay, right there, and right there. So you could have shorted there for 10, and here, well, I don't know how much, 42. It's got to get down here to 41 to make the full 10. Let's go back over here, because this is the more conservative setup that we were doing this morning. And we were using both of these together sort of in conjunction with each other. You see here we had double divergence on the short side. This was going down, this was going down. And we had a cross right here. All right, that sent that one down for 10 ticks. We actually did take that short, and we got stopped out at break-even or break-even plus a tick or something like that. Price turned around. It was making these long swings like this back and forth across the BBC, which is unusual. You know, usually the BBC is going to hold it a little bit. In here, it moved up, started to roll over, and we took this short. I already showed you we took this short over here on this chart, same place. You can see we had, at that time, double divergence and a cross sending it down. We had double divergence again over here. We didn't take this trade, but we had double divergence again over there, and that worked out as well. Right in here, we had... I was walking through this as it set up in the live trading room this morning. We didn't actually take this trade, but the short would have been here, possibly from the down close right here is what I was looking at. We didn't have any divergence to support it. We just had the cross here and the bounce off the BBC with the down close. All right. And that was pretty much it for the Russell this morning. All right. The YM, the only opportunity was right here. We didn't take that. We took a bunch of trades on the Russell. So we ended up plus 9 ticks per contract on the Russell. And nothing on the ES. And 2 trades on the 6E. Alright. I don't see any questions being typed in here, so I'm just going to wrap up the recap and leave it at that. Alright. Recording is done. I know we had a bunch of people in the free trial this morning that came in to watch the Russell. If anybody has any questions about these trades, you know, send me an email at tech@cfrn.net. All right. You can send it to tech@cfrn.net or you can send it to support@cfrn.net. Either one of those will get to me. Okay? Hey, I heard that.
Wow. You okay?
Yep, I'm fine. I found the cause of the problem.
That was,
ooh. I can duplicate it.
You can't hear that at all, huh?
I couldn't earlier, but right now I'm listening on one headset through one computer and actually speaking through a headset on the computer that I was talking on this morning. So, I hear the noises. I normally don't. No, if I have my headset on, I normally wouldn't hear that. But since I'm listening as part of the audience and speaking as an organizer, or a presenter, now I can hear it. I hear what the audience hears.
But, what do you think it is?
I think it's a connection. Right there. I think I can fix it. At least I know what it is anyway. I think I can bring the headset back and get another one.
All right, anything else we need to add, cover? Anything we missed? Oh, I got an email from Mike Reed. He'll be with us tomorrow. He can't make it today, but anything else you want to cover?
No, the YM's pulled back the second time right here. I don't really see it being significant, though. So, we really don't have anything right here. The market's just going sideways. Some days it's best to just not trade.
All right, guys, stay with us. We're going to go to pagetrader.com, talk to David Williams. Don't go away.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, David.
If Michael's there.
I'm here. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Well, how are you two doing today?
Well, we're hanging in there.
Yeah, you know, this is the we've seen this with these markets, and when the market has this kind of narrow range, even though the market is running to numbers and targets and doing all kinds of important things, the simple fact is that it's a very slow market intraday for much of the year so far. From December forward, we've seen very quiet market behavior intraday for the most part. I don't think anybody would, you know, argue with that. And it actually, in some ways, is very good for beginning traders because they can practice by being in the market. But for more experienced traders, the volume dries up. I don't know what our volume is today. Maybe Michael can tell us that. But the volume dries up, and the ranges dry up, so to speak, except for one or two moves. And it just makes it, you know, you have to be more patient with even when you're in the market, because it takes longer to get a move to occur. So this is something that we all have to deal with. The markets do change. They're not always the same way. If you're looking for something that the market's always going to act the same way, it doesn't act the same way each day. The volume and the intensity of the market, its overall, you know, for lack of a better word, maybe just tone, just the tone of the market, is, you know, varies, because everything about the market, all of its expressions, are cyclical by nature. That means that they come and go in some format, some repetition, and so high volume follows low volume, large price moves are followed by small price moves, etc. And virtually every other measurable thing about the market falls in that category. So over time, you're going to see literally an infinite number, so many different ways that it would play out that you could almost find yourself writing a book maybe titled The Random Walk Down Wall Street, because it appears so random. But upon closer examination, the market is quite distant from that. It's actually doing all the things we just talked about, but the method and the how, the when, and the where of all that, suddenly, if you have eyes to see, you know, not everybody sees them. The pure statisticians might not see it, but the markets do have a nature. And thank God for that, because otherwise they would be much more difficult to trade than they are, or much more difficult to forecast than they are. So, you know, having said that, you know, today's another quiet, narrow range day. I think our range today is roughly from 14 down to 9, or to 10, or, you know, 09 is listed in our panel. That's a very narrow range for the day. Am I correct, Dwayne? Are we talking about a 4-point range today?
Yeah, we are.
Yes, that's really narrow.
We are. I know.
Can I go home now?
Might as well.
Does that let me off the hook?
Yeah. You're good
it's
to go.
It's 500,000 contracts have traded in that 4-point range.
Yeah, that's half a point. I mean, 500,000 contracts at this time, 9:30, is very, very low volume. Very low volume. So, not a lot to discuss. Now, let's go over. We might as well just discuss some of the stuff that has happened with the markets. Now, yesterday when I was on the program, we had talked about there being a natural level in the fifth hour, far below where we were at that time, which was 96, and that the market would have to break out on the upside in order to negate that. And it turns out that in the sixth hour, the market did just that. These things are plus or minus 1 hour. So that is how the market negates. This is one of the non-random things that I can show the person that wrote that book. That happens time and time again. If they can't do the natural number on the downside, they will break out, and that's what they did yesterday in the sixth hour. The fifth hour tried to break out. It came within one tick of making a new high, but they were not quite able to do it right at that time. Now, in yesterday's session, after we got off the radio with you, Dwayne, with the markets trading at about 14.06 or 7, we came out with a forecast. And this is interesting, because this would not happen every time. This particular setup that happened yesterday was an unusual three-dimensional thing from our spatial relationship work that I have not seen, I don't think, at all this year.
Now, the net effect of it is it's just another forecast for price movement, but the way that the three dimensions worked together was unusual. I have not seen this in a long time. And what it did is we put out at about right as the market had just broken out, just gone to 1407 and then pulled back, we came out with a forecast that the market was going to run up to 1416. And by George, and that would be into today. And they just went right from that number, and they shot right up, and yesterday's high was 1415.50, and then right on Globex, leading into today's, you know, technically today's session, they went to 1416. So that completion could only have been forecast with the market not having, you know, having broken out and a number of other things that happened yesterday. So we have low volume. We have some unusual things set up wise in the markets. And we just have very quiet movement that we just have to deal with. I didn't take that trade, by the way, from the 08 up to 16. I would have liked to because it was a very nice end-of-day trade. But at the time, when we gave it out, I thought that it would probably require into the next day, early session, to complete it. And I got it all done, basically, in the last 35 or 40 minutes of yesterday's session. So people who are on Messenger Pro, hopefully somebody took advantage of that. We did try to buy the market, but we didn't get filled on that. This low volume doesn't allow the market to really move very far one way or the other in setting up these, you know, the buy and sell areas. So anyway, so here we are. We've broken out to new recent highs, and people could ask the question, well, does this have some great meaning? Well, a couple things. Our friend Michael Z., the fellow that trades in larger than usual, you know, that's a cruel understatement, contract sets, you know, how many contracts he trades in a day. That he had mentioned, this was probably 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago to me. And he said he thinks they're going to run the market up into the end of March because they want to have the quarter look good. And that's so, you know, this is a very fundamental viewpoint about, you know, news-oriented kind of a how markets work from the other side, not the technical side, but just the fact that the brokerage or the trading, you know, concerns people who are running hedge funds and funds of any kind will run the market up in order to make the quarter look good. And certainly here we are. The market has broke out to new recent highs recently above 73. And we're up here, and we're certainly going to close the month of March well above the important 1373 level that was originally a forecast level for March, etc. So what does this mean now? Where does this market want to go? Now, a couple weeks back, I had mentioned that there's a couple levels on the upside that if we close the month of March above 1373, although it's not an outright forecast for a run to those levels, it is everything up to that point, you know, because it's not a roadmap and et cetera. But those levels include 1477 on the upside as the first important target, 1477, 1478 on the upside. So we're at 1412 right now. If we close above here, that means in spite of any monthly correction that we are forecasting, Reflected Wave has the monthly top for March plus now 1 month. That means that the trend would tend to want to be higher to at least 1477 on the upside. So as you know, we've talked so many times in the last couple of months about not being short in this market, and that the move off of the October bottoms that we felt was going to be dramatically larger than normal. And normal would have been the October low was, you know, 1068. Normal would have been for them to go to, you know, 1270, and they did, and do all that. That's a normal, nice bounce off of, roughly speaking, off of that bottom. However, there were indications that we had messaged on the program that the market was going to go up for a number of months higher, dramatically higher than what normally would happen. We have seen that. We've broken out to the upside. All of that having happened now places the market in a position where these larger targets are virtually a certainty. Even if we have a reaction here, we're going to be seeing 1477 or higher, possibly into the 1500s before this move is over. So that means, now what does that mean? What can we do with that information? First of all, since it's a large viewpoint, we definitely want to take into account that a lot of ordinary movement can happen prior to that completion. They could give us a number of relatively important pullbacks on the way. And by that I mean putting, you know, selling off, you know, 30 to 40, 50 points, and then, it is just rough talk here, but, you know, and then putting in some kind of a bottom and then continuing on the way up. That certainly can happen here. But the market is very, very strong in spite of any news. Ben Bernanke, and Dwayne knows this stuff more than I do, but had come out the other day, and he talked about the fact that, you know, things may not be as good as they appear. Is he saying that because he knows something? I don't know, but, you know, and is there a QE3, you know, coming? Because the last time they did one, the markets rallied very powerfully. The market tends to like that for whatever reason. He hasn't done one. There isn't one planned yet. But in a way, because of what he does with bonds, you know, buying the U.S. Treasuries, and there's a bunch of manipulation that he does. I don't mean the term manipulation. I mean, you know, he does certain things to try to manage the economy and manage the financial, the money flow, and et cetera. And so all those things together have prompted him to say, though, that he's not so sure things are as rosy as they look. So we'll see. Whatever it is, the market doesn't care, and it likes what it sees, and we're going to be seeing higher prices in spite of any monthly top here. we may have a decent reaction off that, and we'll try to trade that. But right now, we're basically at a for today, we're kind of at a critical juncture on the upside. We actually have a number of markets, and I mentioned this over the last couple of days, that March 27th, is an important top. We can move to those if you want to, Dwayne. Or did you want to comment anything, Dwayne, on this whole business about Bernanke and anything else? You said something yesterday that I thought was interesting, and because I'm 54, I can't remember any of it. So
he made a statement before the markets opened yesterday that everyone should keep in mind that further quantitative easing was certainly a possibility.
Right. And I think the market likes that. That's what I think.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I think they like that. so, what's that, Dwayne? Did you say something?
No.
Oh, okay. Sometimes my voice echoes and it sounds like you're saying something. All right, so let's see. So anyway, that's basically the S&P. We want to be bullish for us. If we get that pullback, we're going to do what we've done since May of last year, and be heavily into selling option premium on the downside. That means selling a put. And at our Reflected Wave seminar, we showed our statements for that, where just in put selling alone, you know, not including futures trading, but just in the put selling alone, you know, we had a really good year. I mean, it wasn't that difficult of a deal because the markets have been pretty directional. And so I'd like to discount that because the period for selling option premium, sometimes premium, you know, you're in a period of time where it just is easy. It's not that hard. And it was pretty easy. So we had a good run from May all the way till now. We're still in a whole bunch of puts, meaning that we've sold them. And because of this indication, we're probably going to be looking upon any more important pullback to continue selling puts for further advance into this year. We are in an election year. It would not be surprising in the least, really, to see the markets be bullish. Normally, an election year is bullish on the markets. A couple of years back, we all were talking about, you know, things are going to get better in 2012. It's going to be an election year, and, you know, our guy, Barack, is going to look really good up there. There's a lot of big stuff happening in the news with regard to his health plan, which is being tested by the Supreme Court. The fact of forcing people to buy the plan, and you know, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen a more you know, garbage piece of legislation maybe in my whole lifetime than this just abortion of a bill, this whole health care thing that he did. There are some good things in it. I like everybody to be covered, and I like, you know, people not to be able to be, you know, kicked out if they are too sick, and all those things, all the things that anybody would say yes to. But, you know, the bill, the nonpartisan group, the GAO or whatever it was, they studied it, and now already it went from $700 million to, you know, $1.4 billion. And you know as well as I do, if you've got any time watching governments, that $1.4 billion, the doubled price that they nobody saw coming, supposedly, it's going to end up being double that before it's all over. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it. It's just the doubling has just begun for what that bill is going to cost in the end. And, you know, we have people standing up, and it could happen in any administration. You know, this bill is going to, you know, it's going to be this much. It's going to reduce costs. It's going to this, it's that. You can keep your own doctor. All of that's just going to be a bunch of nonsense. It's all going to be legislated away so that everyone's going to be forced to be on that program. And there's already been thousands and thousands of exceptions from companies who are saying, I just can't afford anymore to give health care because the prices is skyrocketing. So it's just a worthless bill. It really is. It needs to be redone. Even if you're on the far left, it needs to be redone. And in such a way that it makes real sense, because obviously you got it wrong if it's already been doubled in its expenses. And these are not small doublings. You know, from $700 million to $1.4 billion, you know, that's not pocket change, although it might be to people who don't earn that money and get to spend it, like all of the people we've, you know, voted into office. There's something wrong with that idea. I would love to come up with a system where their pay, what they get from the tax dollars, is directly connected to the efficiency of government. God, would I love that. I mean, is there some special church I can go to ask for a special dispensation where the politicians, legislature, congressmen, these people who in many cases mean very well, they're not bad people, and some of them are bad people, but probably most of them are not, and they believe very much in what they're doing. But they believe it at the expense of any semblance of efficiency in government, efficiency meaning not wasting someone else's hard-earned dollar. And boy, I would pray fervently for a government that those people's paychecks were directly tied to an efficiency index. And if that index gets out of whack, your pay gets cut because you're spending money that you didn't earn. You're wasting other people's money. It doesn't hurt a bit, and you can push for your agenda. You can push for your vision, however warped it might be. And it doesn't bother you, and you sleep like a baby because you didn't have to earn all those millions and billions that are coming in from people who do have to earn that money. And, Dwayne, am I off track, or wouldn't that be just a jolly good thing to do, to have an efficiency index in the government, and if it gets out of whack, guess what? The people who are working for us, they get a little haircut on their pay. What do you think?
I agree. I think the whole world should be on commission. Performance-based.
There you go.
Yeah. From priests to school teachers to police officers, you name it.
There you go. That needs to be a bumper sticker. Anyway, I'd love to see that, and what a changed world this would be if that were, or changed America this would be if that were the case. So anyway, write your congressman. Let him know you want an efficiency index. You're tired of waiting for some new guy to come in and promise some new thing, and then more waste happens. You know, if you and I don't pay our taxes and default on things, we can be sent to jail. But if the government does it, everybody gets a raise. That's a fact. That's not even a sarcastic, you know, observation. That's actually what happens. The more the government goes into debt, the higher their salaries become. And that's all wrong. The more the government goes into debt, the more people, the more the government grows. And that's all wrong. The government's growth is directly affecting our debt. The bigger the government is, the more debt we have. That's a fact. I don't care how far left you are. The larger our government is, the bigger the debt is. And the more power the government wants over you and what you should and shouldn't buy and who you should and shouldn't, this and that and the other thing, all the way down the line. It becomes an entity that wants power. And, you know, it's set up in such a way so that one central thing, you know, we've got the three levels of government. Very, very wise of the people originally to put that together. Thank God for the Constitution. Oh, but there is that one little problem. Someone has to read it and interpret it. And we have people in our government right now that have read the Second Amendment. Oh, it's just the top law enforcement agency of the United States, the very top guy, Eric Holder. He happens to think he read the Second Amendment, and his, you know, seasoned opinion is that it has nothing to do with private citizens. So that when they wrote that part, can you think of the nerve of somebody? I mean, I would have been afraid, even if I believed that, to come out with something like that, that they would be chasing me down the halls with shovels and pitchforks. But he came out and he said the Second Amendment doesn't really apply to private citizens. That's how you know you're on the far left, when you can read the Constitution and walk away and say the Second Amendment doesn't apply to citizens that are private. Like, who does it apply to? Who were they talking about? Where do we find these people who interpret this stuff this way? You know, it's like, really? Is that really how? Are you just saying that to appease the people who got you in the office, or do you really believe that crap? I can't fathom it. The Second Amendment isn't for private citizens. Guy needs to get an. I mean, seriously, the guy needs another job. I mean, I would like to have him be a trash man for a while. That's what I'd like him to be. I'd like him to live in a neighborhood where, you know, people break into people's homes with guns. You know, him and Rosie O'Donnell. So they can understand for themselves that you don't have to be special to need a gun in this world. And guns don't make people criminals. Criminals are criminals with or without guns. And they're going to do criminal things with or without guns. If they can't shoot you, they're going to choke you. They're going to get to you one way or the other.
Who originally said that, Nishi or Phil Donahue?
Who said what?
What you just said.
What did I just say?
No, I'm just kidding.
It's my memory. I'm on a roll here. You have to rewind that tape.
Criminals are criminals with or without guns.
Criminals are criminals. Yeah, you're good, Michael. See, that's why I think he's like Spock. He's like a tape machine. Did you hear him do that? That's not normal.
He did it good.
Normal people can't do that. Anyway, I still love you, Michael, but there's a Spock thing going on there.
I feel the love.
I know you can. It's just coming right through, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
No, it's actually adorable, Michael. I mean, if I was honest with you, and that's a strange thing for a man to say to another man. So, and I just said it publicly. So, you know, you got to give me credit there. You're adorable.
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think.
Yeah. It's meant in its highest and best use.
All right. All right. Let's just stop talking now.
Let's just continue on, right? That's the thing. The criminals are going to continue on anyway. People need the right to defend themselves for whatever reason. And, to have the top law enforcement guy, the guy who also gave, like, thousands of guns to illegal aliens so they could go shoot them and then whatever that program was. We can't have a gun, but he'll hand them out like candy to people who will shoot people and kill people. Guess you had to be there, huh? How does that work? You know, Fast and Furious?
Who are you referring to?
The Attorney General, the Fast and Furious program, the gun program where they handed out thousands of guns to illegal aliens, and those illegal aliens shot and killed thousands of people with those guns, including some of our people. And he claims he didn't know about that program, and he's in front of Congress, you know, testifying that,
which
and about 70
general?
People in the government have asked for him to resign.
Which attorney general is this?
Eric Holder.
Oh, Eric Holder.
Hmm. Yeah. You haven't heard of Fast and Furious? The gun
program? I saw the movie.
Do you know the Beatles broke up? I don't know if this is news to you, but they're done. They're that thing.
They're the guys that had that one album, Revolver? Is that what it was called?
Yes, that's right. Listen, other people who do know what's going on are right with me on this. I can just feel it through the radio. So, all right.
Let's see, do we have any Eric Holder fans in the audience?
There are no Eric Holder fans in the world.
Oh, okay.
Nobody likes Eric Holder. There's no way you can like a person who's going to take a practically God-inspired document like the Constitution of the United States and come out with a straight-faced statement that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to private citizens, and it wasn't intended to. Somebody like that needs to be he needs to work at a Vons or something. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with working at Vons, but he certainly doesn't need to be interpreting our finest documents and trying to run our legal system based on that completely perverted and almost drug-induced interpretation of the Second Amendment. That's what being far left does to you. It does equally on the right as well.
I bet he can get really good drugs as the Attorney General.
He probably can.
He's probably had access to the impound locker or whatever they call it, the evidence locker.
Yeah, he has direct access to the impound locker. I'm wondering if he doesn't do a lot of his best work in the impound locker, to be honest with you, some of the decisions he's come out with. Anyway.
Well, I'll tell you the other morning, Timothy Geithner, man, I don't know where he stops for coffee on the way to work, but that guy is really keyed up.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I kind of felt sorry for him, but it bordered on being kind of comical and also maniacal. But in that testimony the other morning before Congress, he wasn't yelling or he wasn't screaming, but it was almost like I was watching some kind of a horror movie, at any second his skin was going to peel off, and this monster was going to rise up out of him.
Yes,
it's like there was this held back rage kind of a thing going. It was just odd.
No, he's being held accountable for his own actions, and he doesn't like it. And he's a little circus freak of a dude. Seriously. I mean, I don't know where they found him from. You know, this whole administration. Where do you, under buses? Where are these people that you pull out of, like, subways and stuff? I don't know where they found these people for this administration. You know, Timothy Geithner is the guy that basically is the top dog in the finance other than Bernanke. And he's going to impose all kinds of laws on us. But, you know, guess what? He forgot to pay his taxes. Now, he didn't forget to pay like $500 or $5,000 or $10,000. He kind of just overlooked $150,000, not an income, $150,000 that he owed to the government. Now, had that happened to you or I think you'd be resting your head on some bars. You know, the kind that holds you in a cage until your sentence is up. This is the guy who we're depending on to run the financial system of the government, keep track of all this stuff, make policy. He kind of forgot to pay his $150,000.
Now, was that the deal where he was getting some kind of car service from his company and he forgot to claim that as a benefit, or is that a different...
I'm not sure if that... I think that might be somebody different. And I love our government. I mean, just in general, this is both the left and the right. And then we'll get on to the markets. And I apologize. Let me apologize in advance, like I always do, or try to, for, you know, the rant here. But this is important. You know, it's the year 2012. And the government just got around to saying, you know, it's probably a good idea that we lawmakers, the people who make laws so that certain things can and certain things can't happen, that we can't place bets in the markets on those laws. Do you know how many people are in jail right now for something called insider trading? Thousands. of people are in jail for insider trading. You know how many people have paid millions of dollars in fines and penalties, and it's just wiped them out for what would be called insider trading, which is a very vague law. And yet the lawmakers themselves, for the entire history of America, have been allowed to make laws and then place bets in the markets, having that information that that law is going to take place, and then profit from it, while the rest of us go to jail and are fined for the same thing. Martha Stewart placed a sell stop on a stock that she owned because someone that she knew that was high up in the company gave her a warning that bad times might be ahead. And she went to jail for that. But 10 times worse is the fact that a person can sit there and make a bet and then go pass a law and profit from it. And that's what these guys have been doing. And finally, now in 2012, they're all standing up in the chambers, all applauding that they're no longer allowed to do this. I mean, that had to be one of the funniest, most perverse scenes I've ever seen on TV, that they passed the law and they're all standing applauding. These are the very people that were profiting from it. They hate the fact that the law was passed. Somehow, somebody put enough pressure on this to finally get that done. I mean, what a world. Seriously. The markets are much more honest than politicians are. And that's why we like to trade them, because at least you have a chance. But, you know, with these politicians, you have no chance. You know, whatever their agenda is. And I say that knowing that there are, both on the left and on the right, but not on the far right, they're nuts, and on the far left, they're nuts. The people in the middle, somewhere in there, there are some very good people that really do want good things to happen and are working, and they don't have perverse visions of what the world's supposed to be. They're not trying to change America into Europe, which this administration has openly come right out and said they love everything about Europe, even though Europe is crashed and burned because of the very policies that they so-called love about Europe. You know, I just cannot figure this guy out. I've said that so many times. I mean, just as soon as you're thinking, okay, well, now the smart thing to do would be to this, he flips around the other way. You would think right in the middle when oil prices are starting to go up, well, let's put 10,000 people to work, and let's do the Keystone Pipeline and get the economy going. Even if that doesn't change gas prices for the next 5 years, it certainly helps the economy real nice-like. Adds 10,000 jobs and all the ripple effect from that. But no, he's going to block that now. So, yeah, you just can't figure him out. That's why businesses are so frightened to really step up, because you just cannot guess what this guy's going to do next, where his vision leads him. You know, every time he responds to a world event or to in some way he has to respond and come out with a policy, it shows more and more how differently he thinks than a lot of Americans. Now, having said all that, I believe he's going to be the president of the United States again. I believe that because in spite of the gas thing, let's take the gas thing away for a moment here, but up until gas prices really started going up, his approval rating was in the mid to high 40s, and that's after 3.5 years of everything he put his hand on failed. Everything he tried failed. I mean, this is a fact. I don't care what you say, except unless you're going to tell me that had he not done that $700 million stimulus that we would all fall off a cliff, and that's a very false argument. You don't know that at all, and it's just a way of defending something that didn't work. That's all that is. Everything he's touched has not worked. I can't name one thing except perhaps that he lent GM, $65 billion or whatever it was, and they've paid close to half of it back. But just about everything else, every other policy, plan, everything has just crumbled in front of him. And yet, in spite of that, a lot of people really like him. He has very nice energy. He's very youthful. He speaks very confidently about what he wants to do and then never does that. Now he wants gas prices lower when he said that he really wanted them to be up with Europe. Now his guy, his energy secretary, who gave himself an A because he thinks he's done such a great job. I mean, that's not a great job. How could you give yourself an A? I don't understand that. Are you living in America? You know who I'm talking about, this Chu guy, this Chinese guy? that he has? Have you seen? He gave himself an A on managing the energy policy for America. I could go on for an hour how he should get an F. I mean, at the very least, at the very best, he might get it was a D. He's grading himself an A. What world are you living in? And do you drive your car really crazy? Like some of the people out here that I see. Go ahead. You're going to say something?
Yes, it was either Santorum or Gingrich. I forget which. Not that it really matters. But they said that the first thing they'll do after they're sworn in at the inauguration, which probably won't happen, is they'll fire all the czars. All the czars are gone. Toast.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Unfortunately, I wish I had some hope that this was not going to be the case, but when he gets reelected, which I believe he will, Barack Obama, that is going to be further confirmation to him for furthering of these kinds of policies and the further uncertainty that businesses have to withstand, because nobody knows what he's going to do next. And when you think he does, he zags the other way for some other reason. And I've been telling you this for years, and I'm sure you felt the same way. You just end up scratching your head, and you know it's no surprise that business has a tough time investing in such an uncertain future that this guy lays out. One day he wakes up and he wants to legislate the coal industry out of business, and therefore gas prices, he says, are going to have to necessarily go through the roof. And then he turns around and funds with taxpayer money. He's betting on horses in these companies that are building electric cars and panels and things. But those things produce electricity, which is going to necessarily go through the roof. I don't get it. Every little thing he does has some contradiction to it that just frustrates you to no end. And I'm in the minority, or I'm in the group that, you know, is going to vote against him, I guess. But half of America likes him enough, I think, to keep him in office. So, you know, do your tax planning for the next 4 years this year. Get your pen and paste, you know, go get a guy that knows how to do this stuff, you know, if you have stuff to protect, and start doing your tax planning now. Even if you're in the so-called middle class, because you're going down with the rest of us by the time he's through. So the people that have been kicked out of their homes because they can't afford their home because of the housing crash, and wherever you want to put the blame for that, certainly was underway before Barack got into office, so there's no question about that. But it didn't end with any of his policies, and it wasn't helped by any of his policies. That's for sure. And he is responsible from the time he takes office. But those people who were kicked out of their house or can't stay in their house, or the responsible ones who continued making payments and then tried to do what's called a short sale. George Bush, apparently in his wisdom back then, had put a policy into place that allowed people to short sale their home. And then when that occurred, you wouldn't be charged a windfall profit tax on the amount that you were allowed to walk away from. If you bought a house for $200,000 and you had to short sell it, short sell means that you have to sell it short of the amount that you owe on it. If there was $100,000 left over and you're obviously already in trouble with this house, you go to the bank, they agree to do the short sale for $100,000, that leaves $100,000 that you're walking away from, then the IRS would normally tax you, believe it or not, on the $100,000 as income. They'll just tack it right onto your ordinary income. If you make $50,000 a year, then you walked away from that house. You did everything you could to keep it, but you're unable to. They're gonna say that $100,000 that you walked away from is a windfall gain, even though you no longer own the house, you never saw the money as cash, you never spent the money. It's a windfall profit to you. Well, George Bush in 07 or 06, I can't remember, put this bill in that allowed, and it was pretty good that he did this. It almost was supernatural in its timing, because a lot of people would need that bill. That bill allows you to short sale your house up through December of this year without having to suffer the consequence of the amount of money that you walk away from being considered a windfall profit to you. even though you no longer have the house, you never got that money, and you never spent that money. It's a windfall. So that thing runs out. If you short sell your house between now and December, you will not have a windfall profit tax. However, this administration has been strangely quiet about that provision. Can you imagine with the wave of foreclosures and short sales that are continuing to go on across the country, that each and every one of those people who are in that position, who are hurt already so much that they have to move out, it's a catastrophe. They have to move out of their home, they have to get rid of it at a loss, etc., that now they are facing a tax bill of tens and tens of thousands of dollars, plus interest, plus penalties. If they had that kind of money, they wouldn't be in the problem they would probably have been in the first place. Perhaps. Maybe they could have solved it. If that bill isn't amended to go on for some period of time, that is going to be the new middle-class tax. You see what I'm saying? So he's not going to raise taxes on us. He's just going to allow that bill to go away, if this is what he does, and then all of us who short-sell our house are going to owe windfall profit. Oh, there's that word, tax. And that's going to happen to who was hurt the most? The middle class. There's your windfall. There's your middle class tax that he promised you he's not going to do to the middle class. He's going to protect you. We'll see how much he protects you. We'll see how much this president protects you, because that's coming. I hope he does the right thing and extends that bill. Otherwise, there's going to be a whole bunch of hurting going on all over the United States. Can you imagine that, Dwayne? These people that are already hurting, leaving their homes, and then now they have a $55,000 tax bill on top of that, plus interest and penalties? That's
well,
coming.
It's kind of ridiculous because, saddling someone with a bill when they couldn't pay the... Let me saddle you with a penalty for the bill that you couldn't originally pay. That should fix everything and straighten it all out. You know what I mean?
Beautifully. Handles the problem beautifully.
I realize that common sense dictates you have to do that. It's like if you have a rental property and someone is late paying their rent. You have to levy a penalty for that, a late fee, whatever it might be and however much it might be. And you put that in the lease when you lease the property, because what you hope, your best hope is that it is a deterrent to that individual, that because it's hanging over their head, they never will be late.
That's right.
However, once they are late, then the chance of you ever being able to collect that money is somewhere between slim and none, unless they hit the lottery or something. Because
right.
If they could afford to pay the late fee, they would have just gone ahead and paid the rent.
Right.
I'm not saying you shouldn't have that in a lease. You should, but it's there to act as a deterrent. And once it fails to serve its purpose as a deterrent, then it just becomes worthless.
Right. Now, in this particular case, short selling was a very rare thing prior to 2007.
Oh, yeah.
It was real
rare.
Very rare. You didn't see people short selling their houses.
You didn't know what it was.
Nobody knew what it was. But Bush put this in, and, you know, thankfully he did, because people were able to short sell and manage to get out of that and try to, you know, keep their family together and all the other things that happened. So it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know how he is going to make it without amending that bill. But having said that, and then I want to move on, I just want to say this. It would be wise as a matter of prudence to get a professional to take a look at your particular situation. And if you want to be really sure that you don't have that windfall profit tax on that, you might want to consider getting that done or being set up to get it done on the last day of the year, because it depends. The date that you initiate it is the date that counts. So if it turns out by the last month he still hasn't amended that bill, then that's his middle class tax hike. And it's going to be big numbers. It's not going to just be, you know, 3% of your income. He's going to tack on, it's like everybody who short sold their house is going to owe anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000 in taxes. That's what's going to happen. That's what's coming if that isn't changed. And then you'll know what it feels like to pay your fair share. There you go. Now you're paying your fair share. Just, I mean, if you just put, you know, on the White House, you know, some phrase like mental institution, you know, it would be much more believable as an institution of some kind. And now we'll move on to the markets. For those of you that I've upset by saying all these things, you're nuts, because I'm telling you the way it is, and you need to check your facts, and we need people that run this country that aren't extremists. That's what we need. We need somebody in the middle, someone who has some reasonableness, someone who's either not trying to jam their vision of a brand new America like a Europe down our throats. What is so great about Europe, I've never figured out. It's a really pretty place where tax rates are 70%, they're in debt beyond comprehension, and they finally crashed and burned. If that flips your switch, then, you know, maybe you should live there. So,
it doesn't flip mine. It is a nice place to visit.
It is. It's actually very nice. All right, let's move on. I wouldn't go there now, that's for sure.
Well, why, because you don't want to get caught up in a riot or something?
Well, yeah, that's why. Right there.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, because the dollar actually has some little bit more purchasing power than it did a few years ago. So, I mean, if someone was looking to travel, I mean, it's not...
Are you inviting me to Europe, Duane?
No, I'm just...
You want to take a trip with me to Europe?
No, I'm just saying, it's still a beautiful country, and there's still a lot of wonderful people there.
It's a fabulous country.
And
it really is. It's
an
amazing part of the earth.
Purchasing power now than it did back, you know, a few years ago, 2005,
yeah.
So...
Okay, I agree. I'll go. You win. I'm coming.
So, you going to pick me up, or what?
Yeah, I'll pick you up. I mean, listen, I don't know how long the flight is there, but I'll fly first class with you. You know, if you pay, I'll be up right up there front with you. I don't know. That's probably pretty expensive to get to Europe in first class, huh?
Yeah, probably about $500.
Have you done that? I haven't flown in a long time, but.
Well, I've never flown. I did fly first class one time, and that was only because we were late getting to the airport, and the plane was full, and the only empty seats were in first class, and so. We got bumped to first class because we were late getting to the airport.
I think they recognize you as Duane Reeves, the host of CFRN. And somebody said, "That's Duane Reeves." They whispered, and they shuttled you right up front.
One of those rare instances where you actually get rewarded for doing, you know, the wrong thing.
Right. Well, unless you work for government, then those rewards are endless.
Then it's written into your contract.
It's written into the contract. Okay, so let's move on here. Let's go over to gold. We'll take a look at this, and we'll go through this real quick. We talked about this yesterday. The gold deal here is we originally had a little roadmap for gold that we gave out on March 20th for the market to touch and firm up at close above 1641 or 1642. And if they did that, the market would run ultimately up to 1690. Which is basically a 50-point move is what we were forecasting. 2 days later, the market spiked well below 41, all the way down to 27. And on that day, we were saying, well, it looks to us like there may have been an inversion here. It looks strange. They should have done the move. And, you know, you can listen to the podcast. We were kind of scratching our heads. But on that same day, they ended up closing back up at 1644, which is further confirms the original roadmap in spite of that spike. And then the last 2 days, they ran up and they did the 1690. Yesterday's high was 1690.2, and then today they spiked it. Today is March 27th. I mentioned over the last couple of days that March 27th is a turning point for a number of markets. Gold is one, and if we move on, we can move on from gold here. In other words, this is a top that they're putting in. I do want to say one caveat about this top that's being put in. Anybody who had come to the Reflected Wave course knows about it, but I do want to add something else. I would have preferred to see this top come in at more around 1700. In other words, to trade it as a top, not regarding, you know, disregarding the roadmap for the 50-point move. I'm saying my preference would have been I want to see 1700, 1701, 1702 before I short this, because I have a saying which is important turns occur at important prices. And it's very easy, it's very possible to say, well, the market's just not strong enough to get up there. But to short the market just yet, for me, it's probably okay just in general, but for me, I would have preferred to see the important price get hit on this turn. And I'm a little suspicious about shorting it here, even though today is March 27th. So I'm going to address this tomorrow again, Dwayne, with regard to gold and turning it down. If we do get up to 1701 or a little bit higher, I do want to short it into, you know, March 29th or early April. In other words, we would short it tomorrow for a decline, you know, into those dates. So we'll talk about this as it continues. But the March 27th date is operative right now, obviously in the gold market, probably in the S&P as well. But having said that, let's move on. We'll go to the bond market. last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the bond market bottoming on the week of March 19th. Last week was the week of March 19th. So we're starting to see some of the early firming action here. We're expecting a multi-week advance in the bond market. This will again help interest rates to go to be down, stay down, or go down from where they are. It'll allow you to go refinance your house using the HARP program, H-A-R-P, which I highly suggest people start thinking about doing and save yourself a couple $100 a month. It's maybe $2,000. It's not like the old days where they stuffed you with fees and stuff. This is really a good program. I like it. It gives people access to an inexpensive refi of your home, and you can walk away saving sometimes several $100 a month, depending on what your previous interest rate was. You're going to get just about the lowest interest rate that's available right now, and you're not going to see these interest rates again, possibly for the rest of your life. So this would be a good time to check that out. I'm doing it myself, even on a home that I'm buried in upside down, because my home was purchased at higher prices and it's worth substantially less. In Las Vegas, we had a very, very big decline in housing values. And so I was in on that. This is a piece of rental property that I live in that I purchased as rental property because I thought it was cute. I really did. And it's just small, just 1,100 square feet, and it's just worth one-third of what it was before. But having said that, since my plan is to stay with the house for a while anyway, I might as well lower my payment while I'm there. It's basically I'm paying rent because the house is never going to be worth what it was. In the meantime, I do want to lower my payment. So if it's good for me to do that way, I think it's good for somebody who might be happy with their home or, you know, have their home situation worked out in such a way that saving money would be the right thing to do. It's right for me, and it's got to be right for you to do it. So I think everybody needs to consider that. So the bond market's made a bottom March 19th, the week of March 19th. We should see a multi-week advance off this. In spite of that advance, and no matter how powerful that advance is, the larger forecast rules, which is that there is a multi-year top in on the bond market, which means interest rates, the bond market wants to go down, and interest rates will then want to go up. And all these people that we've been talking about who've promised to keep the rates low, maybe they can keep them quote-unquote low, but they're not going to be this low for a whole lot longer where they are now. And you'll have a second chance with this bond rally over the next 2 or 3 weeks. So check with a financial advisor if you're interested in this. Get the facts straight. Do something smart and right for yourself right now. Don't wait for it too long, because the value of it's in it in doing it right now.
There was a question.
Timing really is everything. Go ahead.
You had said there was a date, the 27th, that was important.
Yes. Well, that's what we're talking about now. The 27th for a number of markets is important. The gold putting in the top today, that's the 27th. We also forecast the 27th would mark a top on the euro. Today's the 27th in the euro. But again, I just want to mention this. For whatever reason, I wanted to see, this is just me, but I would like for me to have traded this on the downside. I would have preferred, and I do prefer, between today and tomorrow, I would like to see at least 134.03 to 105, maybe even a little higher, get hit before I would be interested in shorting against the March 27th top.
Okay, so, Bill was referring to, who had the question, he was referring to silver.
Oh, okay, well, we'll check that in a minute. Let me go through this. So euro is, I'll get to that, Bill. Thank you for the question as well. We'll get to that shortly here. Let me move through. That's, we're also in an important week for the euro. Now, I haven't issued a roadmap for this yet, and I am going to, if we do issue this out, I'm going to give it out on your radio program. So we're going to wait a little bit for the market to finish what it's doing right now with the March 27th top, but there's a real possibility that we have a very powerful short trade setup coming with this. So as soon as we issue that, I am going to give that out to everybody, the Messenger Pro customers, as well as the radio customers here, radio listeners. So again, if we do get a little bit higher in prices, 134, you know, 05 to 10, something like that, that would be a preferred price for me. I'm not telling you directly not to short it here, but that would be the level that I would prefer to short at based upon this top. So just keep that in mind if that is, you know, of any meaning to you. There's a number of different things, you know, happening, different ways that we can measure what the market's doing. And one of them is that I want to see that price level. And if I haven't seen it, I'm not quite as comfortable with it. Going over to the silver market.
Hang on one second. Jim had a question.
Okay.
Are you on the bonds? Are you saying that bond prices are going to rise over the next few weeks, or are you?
Bond prices will rise over the next several weeks, according to the bottom that we forecast for the March 19th low on, you know, 3-day weekly chart, anything like that. That is going to send prices higher for several weeks when the bond prices go up, because it's an inverse relationship between bonds and interest rates. So the bond goes up, the price of bonds goes up, and the interest rate goes down. So that's what I'm saying. Bond prices, the kind of prices that you see on your chart, are going to go up. You would want to be long bonds for a short period of time and then go from there. Now, just want to mention this about bonds. A lot of people may or may not know about this, but bonds are actually kind of a sophisticated instrument. There's a lot of things packed into a bond. Bonds can either be a zero coupon bond, as an example, where the face value of the bond is what you're going to get at maturity. And that means, so if you put $1,000 into a bond and you buy a zero coupon bond, that means you have a bond in your hand that has what you're going to make on that bond printed on its face in a year. You know, in other words, a year from now when you turn that bond in, or 5 years, whatever it is, that is printed right on it. So if you gave them $1,000 and it's going to be worth, you know, $1,150 in a year, let's just say, I don't know what the numbers are, it's printed right on the face of the bond. So you buy it, they give you a piece of paper that has the total amount that it's going to be worth in 1 year. All of that's been put into the bond, and there it is, right in your hand, $1,150. And then there's another type of bond. These are government bonds that have coupons on them, and those coupons allow you, those coupons are actually you being paid, effectively, interest on the money in the bond, so that it would equal out over time to be that $1,150, but you get an interest payment on the bond. Now, the zero coupon bond is in a unique beast in some ways, because it has some really interesting qualities to it. We're not going to be able to do this trading strategy because interest rates are very low. But when interest rates are high, like as an example, 8, 9, or much higher, savvy bond traders will purchase long-term, like 30-year and even 40-year, the longest you can get, zero coupon bonds. And the reason they'll do that, although it's a little confusing, is that because of the inverse relationship of bonds to interest rates, that zero coupon bond, it has printed on it the face value what it's going to be in 30 or 40 years, which is probably a pretty nice looking number. But they're not buying it for that. They're buying it because it's a way on betting that interest rates are going down. So now here's what happens. As the interest rate drops, if you're correct that interest rates are going down, then over a number of years, as the interest rate is pretty slow to move, as it goes down, your zero coupon bond's secondary market value goes up, and often by substantial amounts. So one way to make, you know, it sounds terrible, but just to make a lot of money is to, and we'll talk about this years from now if the interest rates are very high. It'll take quite a while for them to get up there. But when they're very high, if you have a decent little nest egg, you first of all, you go buy the longest term zero coupon bond you can. And then if and when interest rates start to go down, I forgot exactly how it works, but for every point it goes in your favor, it grows after a while exponentially. That secondary market value, you're going to go sell your bond. That means it's on the secondary market. And when you sell it, it's going to be selling for dramatically higher than what you originally paid for it. So the beauty of this instrument is that, or this trade, is that here's a government-backed investment that has the potential for dramatic increase and practically no risk. Now, what is the risk? The risk in this trade is that you're completely wrong about interest rates, and they either stay where they are, which in which case you could get most or all your money back if you decided to exit, or they continue to go higher. If they continue to go higher, your bond will lose value on the secondary market. This is prior to its 40-year or 30-year expiration. It'll go down. And in that case, you simply hold on to it. Because even if you were going to be wrong for 40 years, you still have the face value of the thing is going to be paid you. You can cash it in at the end of 40 years, 30 years, and get the full face value of it, no matter what the secondary market was doing and no matter where interest rates are at the end. So it's a really good and interesting bet to place when interest rates are high, the zero-coupon bond deal. And I myself did that once back a long, long, long time ago. It was in the late 80s, and I bought a sizable 30-year bond, and literally in like 4 months' time, because of an or 5 months, 6 months' time, I can't remember how long it was, but made close to $80,000 by selling the bond on the secondary market, which is completely liquid, because interest rates had gone down. And so because I had a sizable chunk in there, that amount equaled out to be a nice big chunk of money. And so it's a great trade if you can, roughly speaking, judge interest rates. You know, when they get really, really high, that's when a good zero-coupon bond strategy comes to work. Your investment is protected by the good faith and credit of the United States, which hopefully will still be here at that time, but it's considered a zero-risk instrument, meaning that the ability to collect on it has no risk. That's why the governments of China and Japan, et cetera, buy lots of our T-bills, treasury bills, at auctions. And the zero-coupon thing can really make a huge amount of money, percentage-wise, if you're right about interest rates. And you're going to be in that trade for a number of years. It's not going to be something you're not going to be doing, for the most part, a six-month trade. You're going to be in it. You just hold on to it. And as the interest rates start moving back down and moving down, at some point, your bond's going to be worth a whole lot more, and you had very, very little risk. You always can collect, in the end, that face value with interest rates near where you got in or at the end of the term, which might be, you know, after you pass away. But, I mean, that could be, you know, because it's 30 years out. But this is a great trade. So I'm just mentioning there's a lot of interesting things. You might want to pick up a book about bonds. There's a lot of interesting things that you can do with bonds. So I haven't done that myself in a long time. I'm not a bond trader, but the zero-coupon bond strategy when interest rates are high is very interesting, potentially very good for you. Any question on that, Dwayne, or anything?
No. Throw to that? No, I think you explained it pretty well.
Okay, good. So, yeah, interest rates high, buy zero-coupon bonds. That's it. And we have a ways to go yet before interest rates are high. We do have a March top in crude oil. This is especially important in crude if we do not close April above $115. If we stay below $115, we want to start looking for potential short trades in the crude oil market. Gasoline prices are going up dramatically here, and that portends that we're still not done on the top side here in crude oil. We do have something interesting coming up in crude, though, I think it was crude. And maybe Bert can tell us, are we in July crude? Is Bert on with us, or
Bert's
he's
on vacation?
Vacation. Okay. I'm looking at this as July. But
108.14 is the current price.
108.14? Okay. The natural price level for March 29th, I've mentioned this a few days ago, in the crude market is $107, and actually, if you want to get to the penny, it's $107.08. So that's the natural level for March 29th, barring a breakout on the upside, just like what we talked about yesterday with the S&P, that the natural level was below, barring a breakout. So in this particular case, that means that if the market does advance some here, and if we were to retest any important levels on the upside, we would probably want to be short sellers for a test of that 107.08 level into March 29th. So keep that in mind. I'm going to be putting a trade out for that if the market gives us an opportunity to trade it. Okay? So that's actually really good. I really like that setup that we're seeing there. And then finally, let's take a look at the soybean market. Soybeans also had a March 27th forecast top on the program. It came in one day early on March 26th, and this market is now moving down lower. So we have four separate markets coming together for that March 27th top that we talked about. Anybody with a reflected wave knows about these. And these are things that can help you put together a really effective trade based on timing and other factors. So I hope that that's useful. And I think, Dwayne, for today, that's just about everything we've got going right now. You know, we tested the 14.16 target. The Globex did go to 19/20, which is also in our panel for today. And just for people who may want to know, this is just for today. We're not going to see these numbers. But the panel had, 14.19/20, and then right above that level is 14.22/23, very close by level. That would be very important for this market up at these highs. So keep that in mind. They did hit on Globex, then they went to basically to 20, and this reaction in whole is really a reaction off of that level. Gosh, it's been a small trading range day today. Can I leave early? That's all I want to know, because there's not a whole lot to do here with this market.
Yeah, I mean, the range is, you get these brisk moves like we saw yesterday afternoon.
Well, that was good. That was actually a good move. They did a nice thing there.
In 1 hour, we moved from 1408 all the way up to 14, 15 and a half.
Yeah.
And then we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours of nothing. And we get, it's kind of like, you got to sit around and hope you catch this thing when it jumps. I mean, it's not normal behavior. It's not normal activity.
No, it isn't. It isn't normal behavior. What it is normal low volatility behavior. This is how markets act when they're very low volatility. But, it's not normal trading behavior for us. We certainly don't want to try to trade too much of this. We did take a trade today, and it actually worked out. But the fact is that, you get one or two of those, at least with our approach, in a day, and you can wait an awful long time for the rest of it to happen. So we may just have to sit around. Now, yesterday when they went up, they put in for people who have reflected wave, they know that there's a top here, a minor top, that the market will react off of under normal conditions. By now, we would have seen somewhat lower prices already off that top. But it's very quiet. We just have to face that's just the way the market's trading. We don't have to chase it. We'll let them do what they're going to do here, and then we'll come up with something to do with this market a little bit more impressive tomorrow. So there you go, Dwayne. I think that's the whole darn shoot match. I'm going to release you from your job today. I'm going to say to you, you can go return your clothes that you didn't even purchase at Nordstrom and get them to give you new clothes for it.
Okay.
Because that's your policy.
That's a great policy. Can you hold on?
It is a great policy.
Can you hold on for me just 1 second?
I surely can. I can even continue talking while Dwayne's gone there. I do want to say one more time that one of the benefits that the people who came to this last Reflected Wave seminar got was they got to get a ride in my Chevy Volt on the second level of the Mirage Hotel in the parking garage, and I wasn't fooling around. I really showed them what it can do. They'll let you know. They'll All somebody right. will speak up on the radio at some point.
So
they'll say something.
What was you were going to talk about silver?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Somebody had asked about silver. I'm not sure we have something on silver or not. Okay. Let me double check it. That's interesting because nobody asks about silver. This is the first time we've been asked about it. We are in silver. We have our silver and gold position that we've been holding for quite some time. I wonder what I was thinking when I brought this up. I think at the very least, but put it this way, if somebody was just going to ask me, I would be looking for temporarily short positions in silver here for I don't have the price level right now. I haven't worked with it, but, you know, in Reflected Wave, we put in a top on silver. The on-time bar was, of course, this is an odd time frame, but put it this way, you know, it's topping here for at least a tradable move to the downside. Let's take a look at maybe there's something on a longer term that I was considering here. I don't know. I apologize. I'm not sure what we mentioned about silver. Other than the bigger thing where we had originally, many months back, had forecast a October bottom, which came 1 month early, and then that bottom was tested in December and closed above. And that's a very important fact that would be bullish for silver on a multi-month basis, and that did occur. Other than that, I'm not sure I have anything right now, and I don't like to just, you know, go the frivolous route and just say, well, maybe this, maybe that, if I can. Sometimes I do say that, but
okay.
The real thing is, yeah, I don't really have much on silver right now that I can see. I'll set something up. I'll see if we can, but we have a lot of turns here. For those of you who want to trade turning points, that March 27th turn is on four different markets. I'd have at it. You know, I'd take something and do something with that. We may have a little bit more also on crude coming into tomorrow if we get a little pop here. Dwayne, are your gas prices still in the high threes, or have you hit the $4 mark?
No, yet? I don't think we've hit four yet.
Okay. There are some places. Chicago has $4.69 gasoline, and that's regular. Regular gas.
Hmm.
So that's I don't want to rub it in, but, you know, I feel a little bit, I don't know. What's the word when you do something that just turns out to be right? I'm not driving a car that needs gasoline. That's what I feel right about. And I also feel right about the fact that people that came to the seminar got to feel the thrill of that electric propulsion. And some of them are going to say something on the radio at some point, Dwayne. They're going to confirm what I'm telling you now. They're going to say, it was really great. David's not nuts. It was fabulous. Those types of phrases will be coming from them. You'll see.
Any of you guys that want to type that in, the chat box is open. Standing by for your comments.
Standing by for comments. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. All right. Well, Dwayne, listen, thank you for the day having me on the program. I'll plan on seeing you tomorrow. We'll have some more to talk about. I'm sure the market will firm up a little bit. And unless you have anything else you wanted to comment on, I will, you know, I'm gonna try to get out of here early myself today because this is very, very quiet. And, you know, I could take care of a lot of different tasks that need to be done.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do
All
that.
All right, buddy.
I'll see you tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you, everybody, for the time and the questions, and I'll see you in the morning.
Have a great afternoon.
You too, Dwayne. See you then. Bye-bye.
Like Dwayne G and Paul both say they enjoyed their boat ride. Very good. All right, so here we are, not too far from where we were yesterday, about this time. Yesterday we were here waiting for the break up. Okay. Now, I'll just point this out. CFMA1, backbone of the CFRN indicator. Sweet. This hourly chart. Do we trade off the hourly chart? No, not really. Could you? There's times when you could. Price pull back to here. Okay, around 1403. We were looking for a break of this little ledge here when we said 1406. Consider that on a stop. And then price went all the way to here. But you know what? When price started walking back through the MA1 here, I would be interested to know the reason why, once price came back through here, that someone would still be in that trade up here. Obviously, there were people in the trade for other reasons, because price did, in fact, travel all the way up here to 1419. So, there. Now, we have price closing below the red MA1, and then price continuing to decline, albeit very slowly, from 1418, 1417 and a half, down to 1410. Very slow decline. And now it's starting to walk sideways on the hourly. 1, 2, 3, 4 hours walking sideways. Now notice the angle here as we backed into it and moved higher. Okay. Here how we fell away. Now we're getting ready to connect again. So this becomes just like yesterday. As you recall, if you were here, I drew a circle right here. Because this was an actionable area based on the fact that price had pulled into the MA1. Okay. On the overnight, when it pulled up here, that again became an actionable area. Does that make this an actionable area? Anytime there's contact, it's actionable. Does this mean you just sell it? I wouldn't. Here, obviously, the better trade would have been to let it pull back, then let it close below, and then potentially sell the open of the next candle. Now you're increasing your risk to the high here, okay? But if you just sold the pullback, you have no real way of defining your risk based upon price action. You can just say, well, I'm going to risk 2 points, or because it's an hourly chart, I'm going to risk 7 points or 5 points, whatever your trading plan dictates. So can you see how letting this pull back, close bullish, and open here presented a pretty good trade opportunity? And how letting this pull back here and then closing bearish created a pretty good trading opportunity with a definable risk, the risk being, you know, just over the swing high right here? Okay. So as price meets up with the MA1, and it will. Ultimately, it will. They always do. It's probably going to happen here in the next few minutes, potentially. You can let this hour close and see what happens. Does it close above? Does it close below? Let's scroll back for a minute. Here, on this pullback, okay, if you waited for this to close, it closed way down here at 13. Okay. Now, this is a doji, which is typically a pretty good reversal signal in the proper context. What do I mean by that? Well, if the doji had been over here, after a nice move up, it would have been more meaningful than a sideways to down move. this becomes more of a continuation pattern. Okay? So it closes here. It opens at 94. It opens at 94.75. And it gets down to a low of 92.50. Is that a big move? No. Is it a move? Yeah, it is. So there was something to be had here. Not a lot. It reversed, okay? Not every trade is going to hand you this or this. And not every trade. Okay. What happened here if you just bought the pullback? Okay. Well, the next candle, price got on the backside of the MA1 and actually turned into a short setup. On this pullback, if you had waited and said, okay, I got a bearish close into a bullish MA1. I need to wait another hour and see if I can get a up close. If you were using that type of thought process to monitor this, you'd have said, I waited all these hours, and now I don't even have a trade. Now, that can be very frustrating, okay? But it is what it is. You could go, well, you know what? I've waited all this time. I'm just going to buy it anyway. Is that going to make the market go higher? Nope. Here, price got on the backside. It's dropping, dropping, dropping. And then on the pullback, what does it do? It closes above. So are you going to short that? I hope not. Now, if you had shorted it over here, there was certainly a little meat on the bone. From 88 down to 80. Okay? So when you miss this 8 points, headed down, and price races back up to actually touch the MA1 this time, you really want to sell that thing. You really do. But if you let it close, you go, do I want to sell a green hourly candle? The answer is, in most cases, no. Okay? Over here, price gets on the backside. You could argue this pullback here, if you want to argue. But look what happens. Get these little bitty candles, you get a little doji right here. If you were going to buy that and you were going to risk maybe just to the low of that doji, you could have done that. Or a couple points and you would have caught this. But again, see, it's not lining up. Over here, look what happens. If you get this bearish close, pull all the way back to here before the move down here. Okay. I just want you to not look at this, and I don't want it to look too easy. I want you to go, oh my goodness, all I got to do is do that or that. And I don't have to worry about anything else. Now, can you just do that and do that? Absolutely. However, if you are going to do that, you have to have the patience to wade through all of that. Here's a doji pullback into the red MA1. Now, there's a couple ways you could do this. You could wait for this to close way down here. Okay. And if you did, say you sold the open here at 92. Ultimately, it goes down to 82, 10-point move. That's a week's work. Once you had the doji here, you had a red candle. You could have sold a broker the low of the doji with your stop right above the high. That's doable. Okay. Here you got a blue MA1, but look at this pullback. The pullback just sliced right through it. There was never any reason to go long right there. You can argue the short here. Here you get on the back side, you pull back, you close lower, you sell this open right here at 1400, and you get down to 94, 6-point move. Over here, you're buying this open, or you're buying a break of that high, potentially, 1400, and you get up to 5-point move. Here we go again. The opens at 1400, the lows at 91, 9-point move. So why am I showing you all that? I'm showing it to you not to say that you should go trade the hourly chart because it just takes out all the noise and you don't have to worry. No. I know that most of you are trading in much shorter time frames, and that if you want a bigger picture backdrop to your trade, this is really a good way of doing it. Okay? Until price can close bullish above the MA1. Now see, we closed bullish above here, but was that a good place to go long? Well, in hindsight, we can see that it wasn't. Okay? We had a downsloping red MA1, and it continued. It never turned. This is what a turn looks like. This is what a turn looks like. It never turned. So, price is going to have to do something very dramatic to the upside, or time is going to have to elapse, back to the patience thing, until it starts to drift up, and then you finally get a bullish close above a blue MA1. Okay? Until that time, I'm going to look for price to trade lower. I'm going to look for price to continue to do what it's done, trade lower, until it shows me that it's going to do something different. I said all of that to say that. And that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decisions.